Okay, so I can begin now. So first of all, welcome everybody to the January meditation retreat at Jhana Grove, the first of the year. And I know I'm looking around to see who's here. Many of you are the usual suspects. They've been here many times before. And so you all know how the retreat works. I know some people here maybe for the first time. Some people may have been on other retreats and now they come here. But one nice thing about the way this retreat center works, it should be adaptable for all people who come here. For those who come for the first time, who come a few times, who have come many times. We do have the schedule, but the schedules are for you. It's not you for the schedule. So you make the best use of the timetable. And there's only two sessions which I'd really insist you arrive on time for. And the first one is breakfast, the other one is lunch. In other words, that's just for the convenience of all the people who are doing the cooking for you. And secondly is the schedule which you see around the place. Again, that is a guideline for you. So the last thing which I would like to see, the last thing I'd like to see, is people forcing themselves to get up early for the first meditation, which is, well, not at 4:30, 5 o'clock, whatever it is, and then being really, really sleepy. It's much better if you feel sleepy. The best place to feel sleepy is in your bed. That's what those beds are there for. So please rest. And then when your body feels rested and you get up, then you can meditate. There's a difference which you'll find between sleepiness and dullness. And dullness is when we don't know how to put some energy into our mind to see the beautiful part of our mind and let the mind just enjoy the peace and the freedom of meditation. But the sleepiness is something because we live busy lives, and sometimes you may, the first night, not sleep so well, and even though it's a comfortable bed, but it's a new bed for you, you haven't maybe been to Jhana Grove before, and there'll always be a little bit of tension inside of you. And I used to notice that in the days before COVID, when I used to travel around, sometimes going into a new home or a hotel or a temple, a new bed, the first night you'd never sleep well because your body was psychologically not used to the new environment. So the first day may be a bit not sleep as deeply as you normally do. But the second night, the third night, you'll find that your room in which you sleep is like home. It's your little place. And so it's more comfortable for you. So you can catch up on your sleep. But first of all, if you try and force yourself against your sleepiness, especially the first couple of days, then you're wasting time. And so often that I've taught this, and as one of those occasions, I like to teach in anecdotes, real stories, because they bring it home how important being sensitive and kind to your body is for meditation. And that was the occasion when teaching a meditation retreat over in Sydney many years ago, and a lady came, middle of the night she arrived. I never saw her until the following morning, because she was one of these really high-flying executives somewhere and had such a busy life. She had to stay in the office till about 10, 11 o'clock in the evening, Friday evening, just to catching up and tying up loose ends before she could actually leave and go on a retreat. And because she arrived late and she didn't hear the first talk, I just gave her a special interview. And I could see that she was just, from her facial expression, she was really tired. So I told her, look, the first two or three days, just rest and just catch up on your sleep. And good on her, she really listened to me and she followed the instructions. So when she finished with my interview, she went to bed. She got up in time for lunch, and after lunch she went to bed. And then in the afternoon she got up for, I think, the tea time and maybe the talk, and then went to bed again. And in those days there were they didn't have their own personal rooms like we have here. They were sleeping in dormitories. And so she came up to me and said, "Ajahn Brahm, the three ladies who I'm sharing this dormitory with, every morning they look at me and it's like with anger, you know, because they were getting up early and she was just resting. As if they were trying to tell me, what are you on this retreat for, just to sleep all day?" And I told her, I said, "They're not looking at you with anger. They're looking at you with jealousy. They wish they could do that." And so, again, good on her. She rested as much as she needed. It took about 2 or 3 days on that 9-day retreat to catch up and feel like she was, her body was fit for meditation. And so, obviously, the first 3 days she didn't have any progress at all. But then the next 3 days, because she was meditating with a very relaxed body, she soon caught up with everybody else in her progress in meditation. And the last 3 days, oh, she leapt ahead of everybody. And she was one of the star meditators on that retreat. And her meditation was really, really deep and easy and peaceful and joyful. And I like to tell that story again and again and again, just to remind people that you don't fight your body, you work with your body. You don't use discipline in the sense of forcing it to comply with your will, but you use the kindness, the wisdom and compassion. Your body, you treat as a friend, not as a slave. And sometimes I say those things because I've done that many times myself, trying to treat my body like I own my body and I tell it what to do. And, okay, you're going to sit still, you're going to sit for a long time, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And after a while, just the body rebels. When it rebels, it gets sick, tired, achy. Just, you know, there's no happiness in the meditation retreat. So if you want to discipline your body, join the army or something like that. But if you want to get to know your body and be kind to your body and let the body work with you, then you use this wonderful mindfulness together with compassion, the kindfulness, as I keep calling it. And with that mindfulness and kindness working together, you're not doing that as a sense of you're an owner of your body, but you're a friend to your body. You really look after it and care for it. And please, you know, if you want to check me out, just ask other monks at Bodhinyana Monastery, one of the monks I live with for so many years. And many of the monks, you know, get sick and go and see our doctor. It's been a long time since I've seen our doctor. I actually see him more often these days because he comes on our retreats. Is he here today, John? He's a Buddhist. But anyway, I only see him because he comes to visit the temple. But it's been a long time since I've been to need to go and see a doctor because the health which I feel is really, really strong. I sometimes ask, why is that? And part of why that is because you're aware of your body and you're kind to it. You can understand it. And when it needs a rest, you give it a rest. So I have to say this in the first few days. Please don't try and keep the schedule. For the talks which I will give, as you know, in the morning there's always a talk at 8 o'clock. And in the evening, there's a Q&A and there's opportunities for personal interviews. And that will be explained later on. But all of these talks and stuff, they're all recorded. And everything I'm going to say in the next 9 days, I'm sure I've said before, because when you teach as much as I teach and give as many talks as I talk, you're bound to repeat yourself sooner or later. But if you, for those of you who've heard me many, many, many times, please don't get offended. if it's just an old story you've heard before, because I've heard them many more times than you have. Every time I say it. But anyway, that all those talks, a lot of what is transmitted during those talks is not the teachings, because you can read them in books, you can listen to them on tapes. It's like the energy where they come from. Because you always know this, that when you actually hear a talk live, it's different than when you hear it as a recorded talk. There's something else which happens when you see something really real and live. And it's one of the reasons why that people pay lots of money to go to concerts where they see bands live or singers live or something. It's much more much different than when you see or hear a recording or see it on TV. Because in the communication of the Dhamma, it's not just the words, it's where it comes from. And it's just that connection which you make with the person who's teaching, or in the case of concerts, who are singing. So it's nice to be able to come here for the talk, but there's still a recording there for you afterwards. But the major part of the day, other than the talks and the food, is your meditation practice. And I know that years and years ago, you know, when we started doing meditation retreats, or when I was a lay person and went to meditation retreats 50 years ago, those meditation retreats were very regimented. You get up at this time, then you ring a bell, and then you go and do some walking meditation, you ring a bell, then you go and sit down again, then you ring a bell. And there were just so many bells. You know, sometimes it was driving you crazy. I don't know if this ever happened to you on some of the retreats you've been on, but as a young man, sometimes my meditation was really getting deep, really getting very peaceful. And then suddenly, I often say, what would have happened, do you think, if under the Bodhi tree the Buddha was meditating and he's just about to get enlightened and then boom, we would have a Buddha, would we? And the reason is that meditation is a natural process. And because of its natural process, you have to work with that nature. And you can't predict how long you need to meditate. No more you can predict how long you need to eat. We don't have that in this retreat center. Okay, everybody sit down at, was it 11 o'clock? We start eating, and at 15:15, bang, okay, everyone stop. Because some people eat slowly, some people eat fast, sometimes you have to wait to get something else from the counter or whatever. So we're keeping it a natural process, which means that when you get up in the morning, you feel you like to meditate, you can come in here, or you can meditate in your room. It's quiet in your room. Or if it's a summertime now, so it's really reasonably warm at night time. I shouldn't say this because one of my favorite places to go and sit, but sometimes on these retreats I can't get in there because people get there before I get there. It's actually on the stupas, those like two little stone monuments which are in between the kitchen and here. For those of you who don't know about those, that was actually offered by Venerable Sri Panyawaro, an Indonesian monk. You know, I used to go to Indonesia a lot and do lots of teachings there. And he was, you know, knew I was building this retreat center, and he just, with his disciples and followers, they ordered these stupas. That was his contribution to what we were doing here. Very, very kind and wonderful monk. Because, you know, he was actually in the Wihara Mendut, it's called, which is right next to the Borobudur monument in central Java. So this is the same stone as was they used to build the Borobudur monument. And it's the same design, only it's 108% bigger than the ones over there. And he said 108, because 108 is supposed to be a magic number in Buddhism. I don't know why, but anyway, he said, what size do you want it? And I said, 108%. So that's how he did it. I haven't checked anyway. but just on the stone outside that sometimes are very comfortable to sit on, especially in the evening time because it soaks up the warmth of the day. So, you know, your bottom sitting on those feel really nice and warm. And there's something special about the big Buddha inside, and it's very calming and peaceful. So even sitting on those by those Buddha statues is a beautiful place to sit. And there's other places you can find over here, special places either in the forest. Well, you must say that one of the best places to meditate over here, if you haven't done this before, and people who've been here many times know this, that over in the monks' monastery, Bodhinyana Monastery, the meditation hall over there, the front of it, that's really, really powerful. And I say that because if you want to give it a try, sometimes here your meditation is maybe like this, like that, but you go over there and meditate, whoa, that's so easy to meditate over in that hall. So that's another place you can go to, and you're most welcome to meditate there as long as you are very peaceful. So you don't have to always do like half an hour, whatever, sit over here. You adjust your schedule to suit your energy and to just see how it goes. What that means is that sometimes that you don't have to get up when your meditation's going really well. You can just carry on meditating. Because you'll find, and I'll mention this in more detail, that sometimes you get inspired. I don't know why, maybe something somebody says or something somebody does or you remember something. And when you get inspiration, that gives this beautiful boost of energy. And that inspirational energy, sometimes you can sit down afterwards and your really meditation goes so deep and so joyful. And it's not that you want to meditate, you don't want to meditate, you can't help yourself. You're just enjoying it, it gets really peaceful and delightful, delicious. If ever you get those beautiful meditations happening, don't think, oh, it's 9 o'clock, I'm supposed to go to bed now, or it's 10 o'clock, or it's 11 o'clock, or it's 12 o'clock. Just carry on. See where it leads to. Because sometimes people on these retreats, they surprise themselves. And it usually happens, you know, somebody on the retreat, or maybe a few people. Sometimes you get so inspired, you sit there in the morning, and then you look at the clock when you come out. Clock must be wrong. Clock is not wrong. You just had a nice deep meditation, really peaceful, a few hours. Hey, I don't sit a few hours, half an hour is my limit. You sit a long time. Why? Because you enjoyed every moment of it. You haven't fallen asleep. You've been enjoying it. This is what happens. But you cannot do that if you aim for it. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do a 3-hour sit. I'm going to do 4-hour sits. You can try that if you like, but you just get into big pain and you wreck your body. Instead, just work with the energies of the mind and the body working together, and sometimes you just meditate, you just want to carry on meditating. And you get so much insight and peace and health and happiness as a result of that. So, all of those, the night time, you can meditate as long as you like here. It's one of the great advantages of building our own retreat center. You don't have to lock the doors. You don't have to kick people out. You can stay here all night if you want. And in the morning time, you don't have to stay here all night. If you're really tired, just go to bed. Have a nice early night. You wake up in the morning, place is open, you come here 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning if you want to, or meditate in your room, or just come here at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, or don't come here at all, just get up for breakfast and then see what happens. You're working with your body, you're not working against it. And that's such an important little teaching that I'm emphasizing that, because when I was teaching retreat years and years and years ago, the fellow, he was a very senior Buddhist, and he said that he always had to go on retreat because he was a senior Buddhist. So that's what I'm supposed to do. But he never enjoyed it. And one of the reasons was he would call the meditation hall, he gave it a nickname. He called it the torture centre. And I thought, oh no, what's going on? You call the meditation hall the torture centre? Yeah, because every time I go there, just, you know, I have to sit and sit and sit. And I don't feel like sitting, and my knees ache, my back aches, my head aches, everything which I look at aches. And so why don't you get up? Can I? Yeah, why not? Because otherwise it goes to the place and it's a torture centre. It was actually from that experience, talking to that guy, who every time he went in to meditate on a retreat, thought it was a torture centre. That's where we got the changing of perception of a retreat centre. Changing it from a torture centre to, you all heard this one before, see how your memory is? Club Med. So this is called Club Med, Serpentine. Of course you know what Club Med means. It's not Club Mediterranean, it's Club Meditation. And as soon as you give it a name like that, it's not just a silly joke. It's changing the perception that this is a place of happiness and joy and relaxation. And also deep experience of health and happiness and insight, which happens, as I'll explain at length later on. But when we work with our body rather than against it, that is where we start to get some great sort of insights into how to be peaceful. And for those of you who doubt this, remember even the Buddha. Because there's, you know, a few people are, you know, out and out Buddhists here. Even the Buddha, he tried for 6 years trying to get into some deep meditation by pushing his body. And then what changes, he was getting nowhere, getting totally frustrated. Then he decided to bathe properly, to rest, to eat properly. And then where he got enlightened, and for those of you who know the story, maybe some of you have been there, like we go on pilgrimage to these places. He went to, at that time, this beautiful park, now, which was by the river. Now, I know those people who go on pilgrimage these days to Bodh Gaya, it's just so busy and noisy. But I remember just, I went there on my own pilgrimage just by myself in 1972, I think it was. You know what I remember of going to Bodh Gaya? It was just no one was there. It was really quiet and peaceful. And nothing much to do except sit and explore. Didn't have to pay any money, hardly anyone there at the time. Now, of course, it's just lots of people go there. But 72, it's not that long ago. Maybe it is long ago, 50 years ago. But nevertheless. But you could get a feeling for what it would have been like for the Buddha 2,500 and something years ago. A beautiful park, like, you know, like a King's Park here, or like Hyde Park in London, or these idyllic places by a really clean flowing river, the Arantula River, hardly anyone there. You can almost imagine it. And then finding some grass, making a zafu. You didn't just sit. Sometimes I wondered about that, sitting at the root of a tree, especially a ficus tree, a fig tree. Have you ever seen ficus trees? Their roots are above the ground. And if you try and find a level place, it's impossible. If you try and sit at the root of a fig tree without anything else, just your bottom and the fig tree, you soon have a sore bottom. So what the Buddha did was to get some grass, lots of it, and make a nice zafu, a cushion for himself. And then somebody saw him there and gave him this beautiful meal, which was, you know, the old milk rice, as all the Sri Lankans know that, there's milk rice. And that was it was supposed to be an offering for heavenly beings in that culture. And they gave that to the Buddha. This wasn't just rubbish food, it was really delicious food. And the Buddha ate that, and it was under the shade of this Bodhi tree in a beautiful park next to the river. It was almost idyllic. And I always remember that because he did, as you also need, that rest and relaxation of your body. And then the body can disappear so you can go into the world of the mind. If your body is aching and hurting, it's much more difficult. It's not impossible, but it's much more difficult. It's one of the reasons when you're here you get a nice soft bed. Not sort of indulgent, but a nice bed you can lay in at night time. Nice and warm. Your own shower cubicles and toilets. Really good food here. So it's comfortable for you. You know, sometimes we used to, non-COVID times, used to get all these people come and visit from, especially from Singapore and Malaysia and other places in Asia. And they said, Ajahn Brahm, the only thing this is missing is a golf course. And then it would qualify as a resort. And they said, isn't this too luxurious? And I said, absolutely not. Because, as many of you know this story, that, you know, I was the one who designed this place, because I've been to many retreat centers, and I insisted that we have every single rooms for everybody with your own en suites. And many of the people who are here, they argued with me, said, we can't afford it. I said, no, I insist on it. Of course we could afford it. And that was one of the great advances in retreat centers. Those people who've been to other retreat centers in the world, how many other retreat centers have your own rooms with en suites? It's very rare. It's become the standard now, simply because it works. With that comfort and ease, the lack of tension, you know you can get a good night's sleep, you know you can go to the toilet, you don't have to queue up. You know, you can meditate in that room. You can make yourself a cup of tea any time of the day or night. That sense of comfort and safety means it's much easier to have the body relaxed so the body can just vanish and disappear. So you can go into the realm of the mind. That's really important. So little by little, now we find out the kindness to the body, the comfort of... Just with all of those schedules, you know, you don't get noted down who's here in the morning, you know, who's not here. No one is judged. It's another important point of meditation, which again I'll bring up and make more of later on. You know, the judgment stuff, which many people do, and it's almost inherent in us. How's your meditation today? How's it going? Don't ever think like that. It's judging. Instead, this is... Well, the main story was when somebody asked me, because they knew I was a physicist before, probably still am, they asked me, just, what do you think of Lord Kelvin's statement that the only way to control nature is to learn how to measure her accurately, first of all? Which is why in science they had to have standard weights and measurements and lengths and clocks which had hardly any errors at all. Once you had that precision in measurement, you could start what's now known as the Industrial Revolution of technology. We had to measure first of all. And that was a good insight of that scientist. But it's also the case you turn these things around. What happens if you don't measure? You don't measure your meditation, don't measure time. Don't measure anything. Then you can't control. Which means you have to let things be. If you don't measure your meditation is just is. And you will find that you won't be any... hankering, any stretching for some things you haven't achieved yet. It's all part of measurement. That it's like saying this moment is not good enough. There's another moment which is much better than this. And I want that. You don't measure at all. No, this is good, this is better, this is worse. There's none of that at all. Imagine what your meditation must be like. Perfectly peaceful, being in this moment, and not being distracted by wanting something more, something better. It's one of those sayings which I adapted by some philosopher whose name just I heard but has disappeared from my mind a long time ago. But the saying is just so Buddhist. And it was that when you want something more, you cannot enjoy what you already have. When you want something more, you can't enjoy what you already have. If you really want to enjoy this moment, enjoy your body, enjoy the peace of your mind. Don't want anything. Then what happens? You're aware, you're mindful of where you are. You give it some kindness. You can enjoy this moment. You don't want anything. That is where the meditation starts. It gets incredibly deep from that point. So this is a very deep reason why I teach like this. People who want to aspire for things, the more you aspire for something, we have what, Ajahn Brahmani reminded me of this today, we have what I call the three spirations. You aspire for something, and soon you don't get it, you get desperation. Aspiration, desperation, and that's finished off by expiration, when you leave and do something else. The three spirations. So try not to want anything. Just be here. See what happens. So this little way of meditation means that we can work with our body. For sometimes people have what we call the obstacles to meditation. And part of this retreat I'll be talking about, you know, how to understand those obstacles to meditation, work not against them, not to get rid of them, to work with them and see them vanish and disappear. Now, the obstacles, but in general, if you get sort of, you know, you're not happy and things aren't working out for you, a little piece of advice is just to stop for a few moments and ask your body, ask your mind what it wants. I do that a lot. Just sit in your, like I live in a cave, not here obviously, but I live in Bodhinyana Monastery. So I stop and say, body, what do you want? Mind, what do you want? It's like, it's mindfulness, awareness. Not what you should be doing, but and how are you? And a little bit of kindness, like if ever I say for you, you know, Dorothea, how are you today? And then it doesn't matter how you are, but just the fact that that conversation happens, it makes you feel good. I do that to my body. The legs, how are you? Straight away, the legs, oh, thank you for remembering that I'm here. They relax a bit. And you get a lot of understanding of what you need to do with your body. Sometimes when I'm meditating, you know, and it's not going, well, ask my body, just, how are you? What do you want? And when it says, look, I really need some exercise. Can you please take me for a walk? And I'm kind enough and sensitive enough to my body. If that's what my body asks for, I will do it. So, you know, you go for a walk. And then after 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you ask your body again, how are you? You say, oh, thank you, Ajahn Brahm. Now let's meditate. You looked after me, now I'm going to look after you. That's actually how things work. And ask your mind, what do you need? Ask that. And you get these wonderful answers. And actually learn how to work with your body rather than against it. Sometimes, and this is, I don't know why I keep talking about sleepiness the first day, but sometimes I do that myself. I ask my body, what do you need? Or my mind. And my mind says, look, I'm tired, please, can I take a rest? And I'm sensitive enough to my body and mind now. I don't indulge because I know now that no whether it really needs it. And sometimes what happens, you just, you know, I've already had a good night's sleep, but the body says, look, I really need a rest. Okay, so I go to my room, lay down. You know what happens? A lot of time you just, straight away, without 1 minute or so, you're fast asleep. You know, the body really wanted that. And they really appreciate it. And half an hour, 45 minutes later, you wake up and you feel like $1 million. Never had $1 million, I don't know what it feels like, but you know what I mean, it's just a way of speaking. You feel energized, you feel good. Then you meditate, you have a wonderful time. And so often on this retreat, which we do here in Jhana Grove, I don't know how many years we've been doing this now, 11, 12, 13 years or something, that here, that whenever people come and say, oh, I feel really terrible, meditation's not working, I'm putting in the time, but I can't get very peaceful. So often I give the advice to them, go to bed. Well, I can't, I've slept enough, anything. You ask me a question, I'm the teacher here, so you go to bed. I can't. Go to bed. And just, you know, just lay down, don't have any timer. Lay down, and when you wake up, just, you know, wash your face and hands, have a cup of tea, orange juice, whatever you want, and then come and meditate afterwards. And I say that because so often people come and they seek me out afterwards. Can I have a word with you? And yes, that was the best meditation ever. After you've looked after your body and rested it. You know, you're following its advice. What it's doing, it's taking away my ego, as if I know better than the reality of my body. As if that I'm in sometimes this sense of self is in control of everything. Especially my own body and mind. I said, no, no, body and mind is a force of nature. I'm just going to be with it and learn from it. We guide it. We don't control it. We use the kindness rather than the force. Wisdom, power, rather than willpower. And that's the reason why this place does become Club Med. It's not a... Oh, here we go, I might as well say this now. It's not the sort of the torture center. Or the other word which people said for meditation centers was concentration camps. And of course, they get that idea from, you've got to concentrate. That's an important part of meditation, isn't it? Concentration. I'm well known for, you know, teaching things like jhanas, the stages of concentration. No. These aren't stages of concentration. They're stages of stillness. So that's another thing for those who haven't heard this before. We're not here to concentrate. Don't know about you, but I remember my school days in London years and years and years ago. Concentrate! My teacher used to say, oh, that made me just so tense and upset. And that's not actually how you focus. If you have fear there and you're trying too hard, the trying is actually looking to get somewhere in the future, in the next moment. But instead, fortunately, I had really good teachers when I became a monk. It was nothing about concentrating, using force. Using your wisdom, letting go, being in this moment, being kind to this moment. You find you stayed here. You stayed on the subject because you enjoyed it. You didn't need to force the mind to do things like watching the breath or watching these deeper stages of meditation. It's just natural, it's just what you love doing. Just like even beginning of the meditation, just being aware of your body. Just, I love doing that. And I'm not exaggerating. I'll explain that later on when we do, maybe not today, but tomorrow probably do a bit of some guided meditations as well. That, you know, I look at my body, relax it to the max. When you relax it to the max, and I was saying to the monks the other day that that's a very deep combination of words. Some of these things you say relax to the max, you know, people think it's just a joke. But it's very powerful words. How you can really relax your body. Really relax it. How can you do that? Not through willpower. You can sit still, very tight, but nowhere near as long as when your body's relaxed so much. Everything feels so delightfully at ease. You don't have to move. Relaxing to the max means letting go of all the tension, the stress in your body. And I say that's where you get what we call resilience from. It's one of the reasons I don't get sick. Resilience. It's a nice story, so I'll say it now. This will do. This cord here. I'm now going to stretch it. I keep stretching it. If it's under tension, it's going to break soon. But also, imagine this is not just an electric cord, but it's a guitar string. If it's really stretched tight and something hits it, bing, it makes a noise. It reverberates. If I lessen the tension on the guitar string and something hits it, boom, it makes a lower pitch sound, not as loud. If there's no tension on it at all and something hits it, the guitar string doesn't resonate at all. It makes no sound at all. Now, your body. When it's tight and life hits, there's always things flying around. A disappointment, a tragedy, somebody calling you a pig or something. If something like that happens and you're very tight, bang, you resound. You've got no right to call me a pig. Why do you call me a pig? I'm not a pig. That's a sign that you're very tense. You've got no resilience. When you start to loosen up a bit and something hits it, boom, you're a pig. Well, okay. And then you just carry on with your day. You've got no tension inside of you at all, no stress at all. You really relax physically. Something hits you. Doesn't even resonate at all. A bug, injury. Why is it that it's a terrible thing to see happen? I've never seen it, but people have. When like a kid falls out of a balcony two stories up, and they don't have any injuries. Because they're relaxed. Can you do that? Don't decide to, let's test Ajahn Brahm. Push him out of a balcony. No, if you're really relaxed, of course you don't get as injured because you're not so tense. So doing that with your body, it's amazing just how you can take your body and just really give a lot of healing. Because you're really relaxed, nothing really sort of hurts or harms you. And your mind is relaxed. Wow, just nothing upsets you. That's really nice. So we learn how to relax to the max. And to the max, it's amazing just how much more relaxed you can get. So when we start the meditation, which I'll teach tomorrow, this is just the introduction, how we're going. You start to relax and your body feels so at ease. It feels delightful. Oh, that's really good. Because it feels delightful, there's something about letting go of using kindness and mindfulness together, which creates a delight, which you can feel, first of all, in your body. And I've been encouraging for the last few years people to notice that and to value it. It's more than noticing it. It's really valuing the delight of a relaxed body. Because from there, the body will vanish because there's no business there to do it. It's okay. And then you go into the realm of your mind and you do the same there as well. You really relax your mind, no judging it. not trying to force it to be something, but a mind which is happy to be here. And that's such a rare experience for many people in this world, because you spend your whole life trying to achieve something, trying to do something, trying to be better than you are right now, and afraid that you're not good enough or whatever. That stress, that striving, because there's really strange perception that you have to. When that starts to disappear and your mind relaxes, take some time off trying to be something you're not right now, trying to be better than you think you are, or you're better than you think you're not, or whatever. And after a while you realize just what a stupid idea that was in the first place. So you relax and just are. And you find, amazingly, you're far better than you ever thought you were. And you can really bliss out in this moment. Your body. My body's pretty old now. And 69 and a bit. 70 this year. My body's pretty old, but it's doing pretty well. And you can really relax it. Aches and pains, you just can't find any. So this is actually how you relax your body so it can sort of heal. You do the same with your mind. Really relax it. So it's at peace. You don't try and aim for peace. That's disturbing peace. That you notice the peace is here when you really relax. And that gets incredibly delightful. And that takes you into some very powerful meditation states. Sometimes people say, how do we meditate? Ajahn Brahm, you've been here talking almost 50 minutes. You haven't told us how to meditate yet. If you're looking for instructions, stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four, you don't understand what meditation is. Meditation is not this stage, that stage, and trying to get somewhere. Meditation is stopping this whole process of wanting to get somewhere else other than you are, going inside where you are, rather than going somewhere else. Seeing what you have already and how you are and how you feel. Through the joy of experience, how wonderful it is when you don't have to work, you don't have to do things. All of you, you've either got jobs, or you've got families, or you've got something to do in your life. This is a retreat from all of that. So don't exchange your office for your meditation cushion. It's not sort of trying to achieve something or do something or fix something. It's learning how to be here. It's a total different ball game, as they say. Not trying to go somewhere, but to be here. More deep, more fully. And this is what happens when you stop moving around and stay here in this moment, relaxing this body, getting into the body, into the mind, into this silence. Oh, you have some incredible experiences in meditation. But also afterwards, the insight. What was that? Why did that happen? You never want it to happen. It just happens when you stop all the wanting. Okay, this nun isn't here today, but I always remember this story. It's one of the reasons why she became a bhikkhuni. I don't think she minds me telling it. On a retreat which I was leading over in Phuket years and years and years ago. 9-day retreat, just like this one. Despite everything I say, this is a very good Buddhist, known her for years. But then, it's amazing, they don't follow instructions. I was the same with Ajahn Chah. He gave these amazing instructions. I didn't believe them. So I did it my way. Totally messed up many years. And then afterwards, you press the letting go button and things happened. And you think, wow, Ajahn Chah was telling me that all the time. But anyway, so trying to teach people to let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, let go, just relax. But she was striving. Because that's actually how many people are conditioned in life, to strive to get somewhere. What is it? They have that saying, no pain, no gain. Such a crazy saying. I don't agree with that at all. But with this lady, trying, and giving all the advice I possibly could, and she got nowhere. 9 days, hadn't sort of realised anything at all. But with her, you know, she had to get her flight back somewhere. I won't say where, because that would give the game away. And she had another hour. Once we finished the retreat, she had another hour to wait before her taxi would come to take her to the airport. So she told me, she said she had an hour to kill. It's really strange words we use, hours to kill. Even if you're Buddhist, an hour to kill. You shouldn't use that word. That's not, I'm Buddhist. The same as if, you know, ever you have the idea to kill two birds with one knife, or the same knife. No, two. I forgot to say that. Kill two birds. With the same stone. Oh, kill two birds with one stone. Don't ever use that. Say to cut two carrots with the same knife. That's a bit more Buddhist. But anyway, it was killing time. So for her, that was amazing, because what killing time means was just to not trying. Just, you know, just meditating for the sake of nothing else to do. And I always remember her afterwards. It's just such a cute memory which I have of this girl, because afterwards I was having a cup of tea or something, probably a cup of tea. I can't remember exactly what I was drinking, but I was sitting down in the little restaurant area having a cup of tea, and she came up to me and she was kneeled on the ground. I think she bowed 3 times and then she put her hand up. And I always remember her face. Oh, Ajahn-Brah. Oh, Ajahn-Brah. Oh, it's so wonderful. Oh. It was so cute the way that she was just gushing. She just had her first really deep meditation by killing time. Trying was getting her nowhere. Getting really frustrated. Oh. And I just loved to see afterglow. That, you know, she was just like some teenager falling in love for the first time. Well, wasn't a person. It was just a nice deep meditation. And I always remember why. Because she wasn't trying. She'd relaxed to the max. And there, she had a beautiful time. Once you do the relaxing to the max stuff, you find this meditation retreat is really good fun. One of some of the best meditations people have is just sitting outside the kitchen there having a cup of tea. What I call watching the trees grow. Have you ever seen the trees grow? They do grow, you know. You know that. So just go outside, have a cup of tea and just watch. See if you can catch the point where they grow. If you miss it, you turn around and they're grown when you're not looking. In other words, an idea of doing nothing. The other thing is to, on this retreat, I better be a bit faster because it's almost 9 o'clock now. You notice, this is one of the things I always look at when I come here, look at the teddy bears. Actually, there's not as many teddy bears as... Oh, there's some more over there. That's good, yeah. But you know, we started off with one teddy bear years ago. And after the retreat, I think there was 2 teddy bears. And from the 2, you know what happens when you get 2. I don't know what they were doing when all the monks were next door. You've got all these lovely teddy bears now. And the reason we have these teddy bears there is because they really assist your meditation. You put them in the lap and you meditate with them. They're safe. And they are just nice to cuddle. And they automatically bring up this little bit of kindness, which is so important for your meditation. People find it so hard to give themselves this self-compassion. The little teddy bear there, for most people, is all sorts of other monsters and I don't know what's on there, but mostly teddy bears. And you give them a cuddle when you start meditating. It arouses some loving kindness. You add that to your meditation. It's so much easier to meditate, to be in this moment, because it's nice being here with a teddy bear. And you soon become quite attached to your little teddy bears. So those of you who want to do the teddy bear meditation, there's only one or two people who've got teddy bears so far, get one quick, because soon there won't be that many available, or not the nice ones. So, okay. So I think I've hopefully got the message across that this meditation does get very peaceful, very beautiful. And it's because of the attitude you have towards the meditation. Be kind to yourself. Be peaceful to yourself. Be soft. Don't try and get anywhere. Enlightenment, deep meditations, jhanas, insight, they are here, and not in the next moment. Respect your body. Respect your mind. Look at them as friends, not things you own. And that way, they will work with you and go into some very deep, peaceful meditation states. And enjoy yourself. Weird, but it's true. Even teaching a meditation retreat, I notice I get some happiness and joy comes up as soon as you come into this retreat center or come into this room. I have so many wonderful memories of meditating when teaching retreats and people going up, oh, wonderful, Ajahn Brahm, thank you. Getting deep meditations and also your own meditation. As I associate meditation with blissing out and share that bliss with you too. Okay, so that's a little talk just on all sorts of things. Usually in the mornings you just focus a little bit more on one particular type of meditation or one particular problem of meditation, but it's basically all to do about that. Just learning how to relax to the max. Okay, so those of you who want to carry on meditating, most welcome to. You can meditate here, you can meditate over in your room, you can meditate on the stupas or wherever you need to. Oh, you've got the walking meditation rooms as well, for those who know how to do walking meditation. But if you want to take an early night, have a nice rest and sleep, get to know your room, have a cup of tea or water, but please try and keep quiet, because, you know, the noble silence means that you try not to disturb one another. Not just with talking, get this out of the way straight away, is that in the cottages, there's six people, usually to every cottage, and so please don't bang the doors. Now when you get up in the morning, when you go in, go out, there may be people resting, people that may be that close to enlightenment, and bang! That's really bad karma for you. No, don't say that out of fear. It's just try and be nice and mindful as you're going in and going out. Burglars can do that. Okay. There was this Malaysian couple here in Perth. Always tell this story. That they came and saw me once and they said, Ajahn Brahm, that we were watching a movie on the sofa at home, somewhere wherever they lived. And once the movie, it was a good movie, didn't say what it was, but after the movie was finished, they got up, one to go to the toilet, the other one to turn the kettle on to have a cup of coffee or tea or something. When they got up from the sofa, they found on the shelves behind the sofa, lots of things were missing. The burglar had been in their home, in their front room, their lounge room, whatever you call it, while they were watching the TV. Right behind them, this cheeky burglar had stolen things right behind them. I said, you should learn something from that burglar. The burglar can come in and out of the house, your house, without disturbing you. Can't you actually come in and out of your room on retreat without disturbing the other people? So if, you know, you get up in the middle of the night, you need to have some water or something, some tea or whatever, or you want to go to the meditation room early, or you go back late, imagine you're a burglar. So you open the room, the door, no one hears, you open the door. No one hears you closing it. No one hears you walking in. No one hears you sitting down. Can you do that? You should be able to do that. You know, you're much high-minded people than burglars. So, and that's out of kindness, compassion. It also means you have a lot of more mindfulness. So, you know, you can't just rush in and just slam doors. What happens if someone does slam the door? If you hear someone slamming the door, how long does it take for the sound of slamming the door to disappear? Depends who's listening. If you're a nice, wise person, bang, it's gone. Second, maybe, half a second. If you're not very wise, who was that? It's not the first time they did this. They do this every retreat. I'm going to ask Ajahn Brahm, can you please put them into another hut? We have one cottage for door bangers. And of course, that's about 10 seconds. The sound of the doors banging has lasted. So remember, if things go wrong sometimes, people make mistakes. So make sure you don't keep those mistakes. They disappear as soon as possible. Okay, I think that's enough. Anything which, Leha, which I should say? Okay, great. Noble silence means you don't have conversations. We try and walk quietly. Noble silence does not mean that there's a bushfire and you try and... If there's a bushfire, there's a snake, there's something you need to say to someone, it's a bushfire. So you can say that, or snake, or something, but, you know, just don't have conversations. And what happens if you see someone else breaking noble silence? You are all allowed, if you see someone else talking, or a couple of people talking, you can always give them the one finger sign. You know the one finger sign? Anyone want to demonstrate it for me? That's right, you all know, yeah. Not the usual one, this one. In retreat centers, that's called the one finger sign. So give them the one finger sign. Okay, that's enough, okay. So, yeah, okay. So the end of talks, sometimes we make a lot of noise. So what do we say? Sa. Sa.
Sa.
That's terrible. Put some energy into it. Some oomph. Okay, let's do it again. Sadhu. Sadhu. And the big one. Sadhu. After three sadhus, three he's. Okay, make some fun. Okay, so have a wonderful evening to meditate or just go back to your room, whatever you need to do.